Welcome to Tart Club. Turgid Tomes is a wanton book club where we get together every other Wednesday to eat, drink, and discuss the latest romantical read. If you happened upon this podcast and don't like the F word or boners, now's your chance to GTFO. This is your official explicit content warning. This podcast is highly inappropriate and listener discretion is advised.
Oh, please. I even had an alarm set. I was like, 12:55, I will get up and get all my shit together.
Well, I was running a little late too because my boyfriend was like, now is the perfect time to do dishes loudly. And I was like, I'm literally like recording in a few minutes. He's going to be done.
Why? Thanks for that.
thanks for doing the dishes.
Thank you so much.
But maybe now's not the time. Okay. Greetings, fellow tarts. Ashley here, your head hussy in charge. We are venturing into our rowdy retellings theme this month. And we have Susan with us to discuss The Duke is Mine by Eloisa James. Hi, Susan!
Hi!
Why are you laughing? Did I say your name wrong?
No. I laughed because I think this book is ridiculous.
I do mispronounce a lot of things. I am not the best. So yeah, Susan, wow, I haven't had to do a guest intro in a while, but
here
we are. Here's Susan. So how about you tell them how we met?
Okay. Well, please tell me I'm getting this right. So we both listen to murder podcasts.
Yes.
And I joined the Meetup app.
Yeah.
And there was a meetup of murderinos at this bar. And that is how I met you and Barbara. And then you guys became my let's go get drunk, please. I'm having a terrible day at work friends.
Hi, Barbara. So, we love you.
Hi, Barbara. Miss you. Hope you're doing well.
You immediately after... Susan, blah, 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 introductions. You're like, okay, who wants a drink? And then Barbara and I immediately were like, yes, I would like alcohol, please.
I was very confused that nobody had alcohol already.
Yeah, the let's go out and get drunk pack.
God, I needed it. You guys got me through that year. Hardcore.
Yeah. So what have you been up to? Barbara and I were going to visit you in Paris, but that did not happen.
Yes. I moved to Paris for 2 years. I moved back a year ago because I began my PhD at Harvard in nutritional epidemiology. So I'm just entering my second year of my PhD. And it's great. It's going well. It's very intense. It's very stressful, but I'm really loving it.
Yay! Ooh. I'm so proud of you.
Thank you.
So Susan is a certified smarty pants.
Okay.
All right, speaking of drinks, how we met, let's move on into the sip and snack.
Great.
What drink did you choose for this book?
I chose a Bota box, Pinot Grigio. It is a cardboard box with a bag of wine in it.
Hell yeah.
Because this book was trash, I loved every second of it, but it felt like it really fit the theme.
Yeah. Trash. And
then, absolute trash.
All right, I like that.
So Ashley, what did you pick for your sip and snack?
I went with Third Wheel Sweet Red. It's a nice red blend wine. Yeah, Third Wheel, because there are some definite third wheeling going on in this
entire
book
thing.
The entire book. So I just felt like it was really fitting. And for the snack, so she mentions a few times throughout the book about her addiction to meat pies and kind of says, oh, I ate one too many meat pies. That's why I'm fluffy. And it's like, nah, but besides the point. So yeah, I thought meat pies, but then when I actually went around to stores to try to find some just like basic meat pie, they don't really have them, but they have like Jamaican turnovers, empanadas. So I figured like, you know, meat pies around the world.
Oh,
why
yay.
Not? Like, let's... I love empanadas, so that does not bothered by that.
Great.
So, yeah. So, you know, meat pies and third wheel wine. That's what I went with. I mean, yeah. Okay. So those are our sips and snacks.
Brilliant.
Let's talk a little bit about the author, Eloisa James. After graduating from Harvard University, hey, shout out, Susan.
Hey, girl.
A fellow alum. Or is it alum or alumni? Since she's, well, she's actually still a professor.
It's alumnus.
Alumnus.
Single.
Okay.
But I think you can also say alum, because I've definitely heard alum.
Yeah, I didn't go to a university. I don't fucking know. Okay, so she got an MPhil.
Masters of Philosophy.
Masters of Philosophy.
So my PhD is Doctorate of Philosophy.
Okay.
So that's the master's version.
Okay, cool. All right. So she got a Masters of, I already forgot it, Philosophy?
Yeah.
Okay. From Oxford University, a PhD from Yale, and eventually became a Shakespeare professor, publishing an academic book with Oxford University Press. Currently, she is an associate professor and head of the creative writing program at Fordham University in New York City. Her double life is a source of fascination to the media and her readers. In her professional guise, she's written a New York Times op-ed defending romance, as well as articles published everywhere from women's magazines such as More. That sounds weird. I did copy and paste this. okay. From women's magazines such as More to writers' journals such as the Romance Writers Report. Fun fact, I definitely read some Eloisa James back when I was in my late teens, early 20s,
mm-hmm.
when historical romances were my jam.
Yeah.
But don't ask me which ones because I do not remember.
So the reason I picked and set and recommended this one is because I go on like little binges. This is not a little one. I went on a historical romance binge beginning at the end of last year. I have read 110 historical romance novels since
then. Hell yeah.
I kind of, it's funny because this is probably going to be my last of this binge because the binge started to peter off about a month ago and I've moved on to, I don't know, something else. Something else is coming up. Right now I'm crocheting tiny animals at an absurd rate. So look at this little koala.
Oh my God, that's adorable.
Yeah. So I was on this binge and she does a series about the Wilds, WILDE. And I loved it. I loved it. So I was so excited because I was like, oh, I found an author I really love because I love Lisa Kleypas. Obviously, I've read everything Bridgerton and all of her other books. Like, I loved that. So I thought I was going to love more of this. And so I recommended it with you. And then I read some of her other series and they're not my favorites.
Mm-hmm.
So, but the Wild ones are, they're so much fun.
Okay. Yeah, I'll have to check that out. Let's get into the Brazen Book Report. You look scared. Don't be afraid.
I'm good. I'm in. I'm all in.
So I guess we'll start this one off. It's the theme's a little different than usual since it's retellings. So this is a retelling of The Princess and the Pea, which let me give you a rundown of what that is. A prince has extremely high standards and can't find a wife. A strange woman shows up claiming to be a princess, coming in from a storm, obviously. His mother decides to test this with a pea under like 20 mattresses, because apparently princesses are delicate flowers with apparent vitamin K deficiencies, or are hemophiliacs. I don't know. So obviously she is one because she wakes up and her back is hella bruised and they live happily ever after. The end. That is The Princess and the Pea.
10 out of 10.
10 out of 10.
Great story.
No, but seriously, if you bruise that easy,
there's something really wrong with you. You have a blood disorder. I'm so sorry.
Please go to the doctor. Please go see somebody about that. What they don't tell you is after she died from an internal hemorrhage. Just kidding. That's
not a
really
happily
dark.
Ever after situation.
I took it there. I went to a dark place.
No, that's where we're supposed to be.
What? These dark are story. Dark times.
As you were just describing The Princess and the Pea, like there's, I guess, so I liked this book. It was fun, but it was also very confusing.
Yeah, because, like, the matchup with the retelling is kind of...
all out of whack.
Yeah. Well, so, interesting.
Like, yeah, it does feel... I'm not gonna lie, it does feel a little thrown in there at the end, but...
Oh, yeah.
All right. I was like, oh, here it is.
Oh, okay. I was waiting for it. I kept waiting. I'm like, all right, where's this fucking pee gonna show up? You know, he's like, so, bajillion mattresses. Okay. So that's like the story is based off of. How would you summarize this book, Susan?
Okay, so I wrote a full-blown summary. So
hell yeah,
it's not
love
take
it.
A long time, but here we are.
Love
okay,
it.
So Olivia and her twin, Georgina, are I tried to make this like short and clear, but it may make no sense. Olivia and her twin, Georgina, are trained to be duchesses, as Olivia is marrying Rupert. 10 out of 10 name, Rupert.
Rupert.
Rupert goes off to war after he and Olivia try to have sex, but he has a limp dick.
Nice.
So that's a fun one. Georgina is invited to compete for the hand of another duke, whose full name is Tarquin, which is really interesting. And Olivia goes to the house with Rupert's dog, Lucy, who is my favorite character, but we'll get there.
MVP.
Quinn has a tragic backstory at first about his strumpet wife, and then suddenly a dead son, too. So that was random. So his mother is trying to find a duchess who won't break his heart. But then he goes and falls in love with Olivia. Georgina is very suddenly over it and wants to be a scientist. Then Rupert, who the entire story was completely mentally unable to do anything, suddenly becomes a war hero. But he's dying on the French coast. So naturally, Olivia and Quinn have to get in a boat, cross the English Channel, and save him. But he dies. And then Olivia is sort of kidnapped. And then she sleeps on several mattresses and finds a key to escape. But that subplot goes haywire because the key is completely useless and Quinn has to save her anyway. And then they all live happily ever after.
Accurate. Accurate. This book is wild. You're wild for that one, Miss James.
Absolutely bonkers.
Did I read her sister's name wrong the whole fucking time? I thought it was like Georgiana, but I could have been adding letters.
Nope. I might have thrown out an A. I might have ditched an A. Let's find out. I have
Kindle on
my phone.
Trying to see. Yeah, I've got my copy out there, but I don't want to deliver the cats in my room.
No, I got it. Hold on. Georgiana. You're right. Yeah.
Oh my god, it's not me for one!
Nope, it's me. I was writing this summary. So I read this entire book yesterday morning.
Nice!
And then I wrote this summary like three glasses of wine in, so...
Hell yeah. Are you three glasses of wine in now?
No.
Aw.
No, I was a little hungover.
I was like, I need to catch up!
All right, Ashley, so... Now that you've listened to my summary.
Yes, loved
it. How would you summarize this book?
Messy. Messy. You could also summarize it, Duke Swap. Bridgerton season 2. But wait, it's worse. Like, you know, it's several, but several things. But I went with Olivia has been betrothed to Rupert since before they were ever born. fair, love that.
Makes
love
sense.
That for them. When events are finally put into motion for their marriage, Olivia decides to trade one duke in for another. Her sister's intended. that's it. That's the summary. Makes sense.
Makes the only sense you can make out of this book, really.
She tried one. But yeah, this did remind me a lot of Bridgerton, which we'll get into in my hot take.
Amazing.
Okay, back to peas.
The Duke is mine.
Peas and pods and whatnot and third wheeling.
Great.
Were there any good quotes?
Yeah, my favorite quote is when Olivia sees Quinn's dick and says, "No limp celery this."
Oh my god. Limp celery.
There we go. Dude, come on.
Don't do Rupert like that. Come on now.
I was like, first of all, who puts those words together? Second of all, what the fuck?
What the fuck?
Also,
okay.
Celery doesn't get limp.
Oh, shit. It gets like soft,
soggy.
But it's not, but it doesn't actually like fold. You know what I'm, right?
It doesn't.
I don't know. Imagine. Maybe I haven't left my celery in my fridge long enough.
Well, the top of celery, like the top of celery can.
Yeah.
I just feel like there were better metaphors for flaccid dicks than limp celery. Yes.
Limp celery is pretty funny sounding.
It's very funny.
Learn new things every day. I don't like to waste food, so I don't know.
I am a good person, so fuck people who've seen limp celery stalks. Or
fuck you. How dare you? Probably gardeners are out there like, but we can't help it.
But we can't help it.
Oh my God.
Excellent.
Oh, all right. Did you have another quote anymore?
No, that was my favorite one. For okay. Sure. There's some like other it. Stuff in there that I did like that we'll get to when we talk about favorite parts, but they're too long to quote.
Gotcha.
All right. So besides limp celery, do you have any other good quotes that you really loved?
How am I going to follow that one up? throughout the book, there's talk of Olivia's weight and her being, quote, fat. And there's a part where she's talking to her sister, Georgiana, and Georgiana and Olivia are basically opposite body types. Mm-hmm. Georgiana is on the much thinner end of the spectrum, and Olivia has curves.
Yeah.
So I believe it might be during that conversation, or one of the many that were had regarding Olivia's weight and body type, I decided that since my curves aren't going to disappear due to gorging on lettuce, I might as well flaunt them. If men like the bovine appeal, as you said, they're certainly going to get it. And why I love this, it's that whole conversation of, yes, it's bullshit, you shouldn't care, you shouldn't do things to appeal to men, like, it doesn't fucking matter. But in that time frame, it kind of does, because they're, like, they, basically, women were their property, and you relied on men to take care of you in that time frame, so it makes sense. Nowadays, fuck no. But...
Oh, Jesus Christ. The lettuce diet really killed me. I was like, so you're just gonna die?
Like, if you're eating iceberg, you're gonna die for sure, because there's absolutely it's literal water. So I couldn't find it, but basically, so this is during a conversation she has with her sister, and her sister, like, this is a reply to her sister saying some shit, like saying something to the effect of, men love the bovine appeal. And it's like, you're telling appeal. She looks like a cow? You're telling her she looks like a cow and men like cows, right? That's what bovine means, right?
Yes, it's 100% what that means.
Rude.
The number of times, there's at one point she's compared to a gooseberry.
Oh!
And I was like, what the actual... And so, under least favorite parts, I have the near constant fat shaming, self and otherwise.
Yeah. Her sister just trying to reassure her by telling her, you look like a cow, and men like the look of cows.
From the descriptions of her, I don't think she's that heavyweight.
No, like, that was another thing that was mentioned in reviews. Apparently, the author has several books where the characters are curvy, which doesn't necessarily mean they're actually plus-sized.
Yeah.
So that was kind of a complaint. Also, the skinny shaming of Georgiana. Oh, yeah. It went, the body both shaming ways. Went both ways in this, which... You know, okay, it's a little different. It's not. But, you know, no, because that's something I notice that authors do sometimes when they have what they believe is in their standards, is a plus size character. They'll body shame all the thin, like, other thin characters in the book. Yeah. And it's like, you don't have to do that. Like, the romantic interest.
Make it better.
Yeah. And, like, I just notice it, romantic interests a lot. We'll talk about. I don't like stick women and blah, blah, blah. And it's like, okay, but that's like, you know what, guys? It's a red, okay, in real life, it is considered, we're skipping ahead to red flags. Yeah. It's considered a red flag when a guy has to degrade or talk down about other women to try to compliment you. So he's complimenting 100%. You. He's complimenting you by shitting on other women, which shows you the level of respect he has for them.
And it's not about you then. It's about all of these other women he's also looked at. And so he's literally describing you as in comparison to other women and not talking about you as an individual.
Yeah. It's like, what? No. Shit. What?
We hate it. We're here.
Hate it. Hate it. Don't do it. Hate it.
I would not date any of the men in this book.
Absolutely not. All right. Here's a quote I definitely did not like. So, he is talking about his wife.
Mm-hmm.
It basically, so I don't remember exactly, but essentially, Quinn is talking about his ex-wife and how she's promiscuous, which that's a whole other thing in and of itself. So basically, he married his first wife because he was infatuated with her, and she did not return the favor, and she was miserable and unhappy because they just really did not mesh. Yeah. They had different love languages, basically. She wanted more words of affirmation, and I think he was more actions.
Yeah.
And she wasn't feeling it, so she was fucking miserable. And so, yeah, she went off and had affairs, which my thing is, if he had done the same thing, no one would have been calling him a slut. No one would have been saying anything bad about him. Like, I know that's this time period and everything, but
yeah.
What really pissed me off was that he basically made, I don't have the direct quote, but he essentially made her vagina was like throwing a hot dog down a hallway comment.
Oh, very, very much so, yeah.
Are you fucking kidding me, dude? And that's something that doesn't really get talked about. Men in that time period treated women as cachet, like an accessory to bring their reputations up. And the fact that you were infatuated with her because she was so beautiful and blah, 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 you weren't in love with her. That was infatuation. And what he felt for Olivia was just straight lust. That was just insta-lust. It wasn't insta-love, it was insta-lust. And he essentially felt the same thing for his first wife, but somehow him feeling that for his first wife and her not reciprocating that, because also in that time frame, of course her parents were going to push her. And that's another thing. Yeah. It was vaguely mentioned that her parents kind of pushed her into marrying him because he was the top choice in the hierarchy. Duke. Of course they're going to have her marry a duke. It doesn't matter who she would have been in love with. They're going to have her marry him to protect their finances, because in those times, everyone's daughter was a broodmare and to be traded for wealth. So the fact that he fucking made comments about her vagina being loose because she slept with a couple other dudes that weren't him.
The whole thing drives me batshit, because biologically, your vagina does not change shape and structure because of a man's penis.
It's a muscle.
It's a literal muscle. You have it expand when you are turned on. So that's why, you know, some people have pain at first and some people don't.
People exhaust me. People exhaust me with that shit. I can't. Getting right into favorite part.
Okay, so my favorite parts were any scene between Olivia and Quinn's mom. I just thought they were so good. They were so, like, the wordplay was incredible, like, really fun, intense. But, like, for some reason, she abandoned all wordplay for the rest of the novel. Like, that was the only point where she had these really clever little back and forths. And the other thing is, I did think, in terms of one of the plus points of this book, is Olivia has incredibly high emotional intelligence. Mm-hmm. And the way she responds to Quinn trying to, like, chuck his mother out by being like, no, was not something I've seen in these books. Usually it's like emotions are high and they just chuck the mother out, and that then the mother disappears to Scotland or whatever. And when Olivia literally shut him down and was like, no, your mother has every right to be upset and we're going to treat her like a human being, I was like, plus point. Solid plus point.
Yeah, because normally they just kind of, like, yes, the mother was a bitch and inappropriate and in the wrong, but she's still a human being. And at the end of the day, she was trying to look out for her son, which is what Olivia explains to him.
Yeah.
You know, you can't just throw your mom out of the house because she doesn't like me. That doesn't, you know.
Yeah. No, I agree. And I mean, like, at the same time, you're like, well, how about everybody goes to different rooms and calms the fuck down and then has a real conversation?
Yeah. You know? I don't think they really had a conversation about it. They just kind of skipped ahead.
No, the mother, like, then disappears and shows up in the epilogue being best friends with the dog, which, again, the number of, like, skipping and, like, random shit that happens where I'm like, that explained nothing. Like, there is no explanation.
I would have liked to see the conversation, the mending. I would have liked to see the resolution.
Yeah.
The conversation with the mom, that would have been nice.
I would much rather have seen emotional resolutions and character development in the latter half of the book instead of a random trip to France.
So, like, you know those little That's my those little circus skits.
Yeah.
That's kind of what the end of the book seemed like for me. It was just like a little offside adventure. But I'm not gonna lie, I don't know. I was like, all right, I'm here.
Very confused. I was like, why are we here? What are we doing?
Yeah.
And then I thought the kite scene was cute.
Oh, yeah, it was.
With the, like, flying of kites. I didn't love the follow-up of them making out in a tree. I was very confused as to how they were doing that. Like, at one point, they're, like, sitting next to each other with their leaning against the trunk. And I'm like, I don't know any branches that big.
Susan, it doesn't count if they make out when they're in a tree. Didn't you know? That's how they ended up making out in a tree. Because, you know, he's trying to go for her sister. He's trying to marry her sister and vice versa. But, you know, he still wants to make out with Olivia. So he comes up with the plan, with the solution of what happens in the tree stays in the tree. It's not Vegas. It's a fucking tree. People can see you.
Well, and the other thing is, frankly, I am so done with the trope of sisters being into the same guy.
Ugh.
I am so done with it. It actually makes me so furious. And it's what made me angry about Bridgerton as well, because that didn't happen. Like, in the books, that did not really happen.
Mm-mm.
Like, to the extent they did it in the show. And so then even here, like, I was like, how are you going to resolve this? And they resolved it by just being like, Georgiana's over it. And I was like, what?
She wants to be a scientist. Which, I mean, honestly, I'm not mad at. But...
Love it. Love it for Georgiana. Would have loved the character development that got her there.
Georgiana went from point A to point B. No, she went from point A to point D.
Like, so fast.
Like, there was no B or C. You just kind of skipped over all that. Which, I mean, they did, like we just said, they did in a bunch of other parts
so
of the book.
So many times. All right, yeah. So what were your favorite parts?
First and foremost, love the Rogue hair. The white strip, X-Men, Rogue.
I loved it.
If you know, you know. We all know it's a little fucked up to go after the guy that's meant for your sister. Don't do it.
Or maybe just, like, tell your sister he made out with you on site.
Just be like, hey, I didn't do it. His mouth fell on mine. So crazy. Oops. She could have been like, oh, well, he mauled me and I kind of liked it.
Which
so
he fully did.
Really
he fully accosted her. She literally showed up. She was like, sir, please stop. And then he kissed her and she was like, why did you do that?
He's like, I'm going to do it again. I don't know, but I'm going to do it again. Here we go.
We had some really fun consent moments in this one.
Yeah.
Like, we'll get there with my what the fuck moment. But, like, yeah.
He mauled me and I kind of liked it. So what do we do now? You know, that's all you had to do. That's all you had to do. But,
just be honest.
We're going to get to that. So by the end of it, Olivia did do the right thing.
Mm-hmm.
She sucked it up. She did the right thing. Rupert's dying wish was to see his dog again, and even though she was fucking around and doing all her shit, once she found that out, she's like, all right,
bring him his dog,
we gotta do it. I'm gonna do it for Rupert. It's the right thing to do. And it was. And I know a lot of people complained about the end and how it was, like, off, and it was, but the part where they went to Rupert and fulfilled his dying wish and everything, that absolutely had to happen.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
Absolutely. Because if it didn't, I would have been so fucking pissed.
I'm not gonna lie, I'm already pissed.
Oh, I'm already pissed.
Died, but, like,
we're gonna talk about that.
Right.
But just, it's bare minimum.
Yeah.
Yes, just bring the dying man his dog for all the shit that you've talked, for all that you fucked around behind his back, for, you know, everything. We're gonna get into all that. But I just really appreciated that in the end, she did do right by Rupert, at least in that one instance.
Moment.
And absolutely, he needed that. He deserved it. Let's move on to least favorite part.
So many. And so I'm not going to address my what the fuck moment yet, because I have a whole thing written out. But
hell yeah.
Behind my what the fuck moments of the beginning of the book, I said there are three things that were my least favorite parts, and I probably have mentioned all of them so far. One was the near constant fat shaming. I don't
oh,
the gosh. like looking at her own leg and freaking out, There's this one part where he's describing her as like plump and juicy, and she's like, you mean like a roasted chicken? And I was like, whoa, okay, not necessary. Like, I hated all of it. That was fucking miserable. Two, I agree with you that she needed to bring the dying man his dog, but like, the author could have set that anywhere. Why France happened, I have no idea. I just don't think it would be that hard. Like, maybe if he made it into port in England and they brought him back to Quinn's place so that he could see his dad. I thought there were so many ways she could have made that reunion a positive one or a better one.
Yeah.
Because to me, the fact that Rupert died is a goddamn disgrace.
Absolutely. Like,
there was no reason for that. Rupert did not need to die. And also, his father's weird, like, fainting spell or whatever, the father totally could have gone to see him, too. Like, they just, the weird, like, it was almost like she connived this whole thing about Rupert, right? And because she is the author, this isn't what, something that really happened. This whole thing about Rupert so that Quinn could go save her from a burning building. I don't know. The fact that Rupert even, Rupert could have lived. Rupert would have been fine. Rupert could have lived. He'd probably be a little hurt.
So I know I said that it was my favorite part that she did do right by him in that instance, but
I love that Lucy was with him.
Yeah,
that's a wonderful part.
That's really what it is, and that Olivia owned up to, yeah, what I'm doing is kind of fucked up. I should do this for him. And she should have, but I definitely agree. He did not have to die. It was ridiculous. They even said in the very beginning, he pretty much told her that he considered her a friend, but he wasn't in love with her or anything.
Yeah.
So he understood their circumstances, how they were both kind of forced in. It was an arranged marriage before they were ever born. They were both forced into it. And he understood that. But it's a cop-out. It's the easy way out.
It's a total cop-out. That's exactly what it was. It is a total cop-out with, again, no attempt to make any emotional resolution about it.
Yeah, when she and Quinn showed up to his deathbed, he was like, oh, you're happy, good. You know, he was happy for her. He could have done that and lived. And then he would have had the opportunity to find true love for himself.
Which he totally could have found.
He could have.
Of the, like, people in this book, Rupert was the kindest, the most, hands down. And I understand that some characters are more quote-unquote complex, but, like, Rupert could have lived a very happy, fulfilled life. And the whole, like, I was so excited. Ashley, I was so excited when I heard that he was a war hero. I was like, this is amazing. So he's going to go be a war hero, and he's going to live the life he actually deserves, and people are actually going to, like, love him. Like, and it's going to be great.
Show him respect.
Exactly. And so for me, I was so excited about that. And then when I heard he was dying, I was so fucking pissed. I was so fucking pissed.
It's cheap.
It's a cop-out, it's cheap, it was unnecessary.
I hated it.
You could have come up with so many other ways that, like, you could have ramped up the whole ending and made some sort of storyline. That one was a total cop-out.
Yeah, obviously I share that least favorite part. Did you have any others?
It was the fat-shaming and then all of France. So what were your least favorite moments, Ashley?
Obviously Rupert dying, and just in general, the complete awful, horrid mistreatment of Rupert.
Yeah.
So, allegedly, I did not confirm this 100%, but allegedly, according to the reviews, the author based Rupert off of Forrest Gump.
There's no actual attempt to understand what his handicap is, to get into the nuance of what it means to be autistic or what it means to be, you know, any sort of anything cohesive.
I believe what they're going for is that he had some brain damage when he was, when he lost air when he was born. He had a bit of brain damage. They didn't explain that until a few chapters in. So when I was reading it to start with, it just seemed like he was a boring guy she was arranged to marry. And then it went further and you meet him and it's very clear that it's something is up. Yeah. And obviously, I went to, oh, maybe he's on the spectrum, which I don't remember if they tell you about the brain damage until after the sex scene or before it. I think they say it after. So I'm reading it. I'm just assuming the character is on the spectrum, autistic.
Some of the best people I've ever met in my life have autism or on the spectrum or whatever you
They're
like
so
to say.
Fucking so smart. Those, they're so fucking those are some incredible. Of the smartest people I've ever met in my life. So then the sex scene happens. And at first, I'm trying to go into it. I'm like, oh, okay, haha, you know, it folds, whatever. He can't get it up. But as the sex scene's going on, I just felt really uncomfortable. And honestly, yeah. it just made me really sad and really grossed out because they're essentially being forced exactly. to have sex with each other. I tried to go into it, you know, with an open mind. Okay, whatever. Let's see where this is going to go. And I think it was going for humor, which at first I could see it. But then after, you know...
So I'll tell you why, for me, the humor was gone. And so I wrote this as my what the fuck moment, so I'm just going to skip to that really quick.
Yeah.
I said, when he began chanting in, I was mortified.
Oh,
and
my
then
God.
When he nearly burst into tears saying another thing that doesn't work,
it was so upsetting.
Heartbroken. And that is not because the writing was good. It's because this is literally beyond inappropriate and it's massively infantilizing.
It's written in there to be funny, but it's horrifying.
It's so far from funny. Like, I actually wanted to cry. Like, I put the book aside for like 20 minutes to be like, what the fuck did I just read?
Back in that time period, women were kind of trained to, hey, this is going to be unpleasant, but you know, you can't really get around it. You just got to suck it up. So Olivia is mentally prepared. Does she want to do it? No. And it's awful that she has to, but she is mentally prepared. Rupert is not prepared at all. It's sprung on him and he just can't handle it. And then when it becomes clear that he can't handle it, you just feel so disgusted and horrified and mortified for him.
Yeah.
You know, Olivia was kind of making light of it, but then at the same time, you go from her end of things, what the fuck else is she gonna do? You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, what? There is no winning in this situation.
No. And she did, I think, handle the end properly, where she was okay, I'm going to help you.
You don't
have to lie.
Yeah.
We're going to say this, and this is what we're going to do together. I did feel like Olivia genuinely did care.
She did. But going back to my least favorite part, the name calling. So Olivia, while she understood somewhat what was going on with Rupert to a certain degree, she understood that there was something going on there. She still called him names and made fun of him to her sister.
Especially to Georgiana, yeah.
And there were arguments that, oh, well, that's in the privacy, just her and her sister. Because she did actively throughout the book, when other people tried to say derogatory or shitty remarks about him, she would stand up for him. Which, okay, that's what you should do, period. You don't get a pat on the back for that.
No,
that's what you should do.
Basic human decency. So
it could have been handled better. Rupert was done very dirty. And again, he did not have to die. That was a cop-out. It was cheap. It could have gone a different way.
His whole character was a cop-out. We're going to take a character that is intellectually disabled, and we're going to use that as a driving plot device instead of adding any nuance to these people exist. They are valid. They are still good people. They can still do good things.
We're going to use him as a plot device to keep the couple that's in love apart, and we're also going to use him to develop the character of the female lead.
Yeah.
But he's got to go after that. That's all he's there for.
I just got my be real too, so you're just going to be on it.
What's be real?
So this is a be real. It prompts you every day to take a photo, like, randomly throughout your day. And so it takes both the photo of what you're looking at and a selfie of you. You can follow each other and stuff on it. And so, like, it's just kind of a cute way to be like,
I like that.
My life is actually, like, instead of Instagram edited and curated.
I like that.
Yeah, it's fun.
Okay. So other than the Rupert thing, which is same thing as Bridgerton. So just the thing that Quinn he just insisted on trying to sleep with Olivia while continuing to pursue her sister and lead her on.
Fucked.
And Olivia is just acting like, oh,
this is fine.
Yeah, this is fine. And, you know, knowing that her sister is actually interested in him at that point. Girl, you're wild for that.
No, it's beyond
fucked
up. Here's the other thing. What is it with men being like, I want to marry somebody I have no feelings for?
So I find it odd, but I do see this pattern where men marry the women that are, quote, perfect on paper, or someone that their family will approve of, but then they go and sleep around on them.
Yeah.
Your wife doesn't have to be put up on a pedestal.
No.
Where you can't touch her and she doesn't want to do freaky shit in bed.
Oh, yeah. God, there's, like, men, the, like, wife material.
The, what is it? The Magdalene and the Madonna?
Something like that. I can't remember.
So it's like the virgin and the whore. Yeah. So your wife is supposed to be this pure, perfect being on this pedestal. And then the guys will be like, ah, I want some raunch, down and dirty sex. And they'll just go, like, find some woman that they just disrespect and do not care about and do that to. But my thing is, if you're married to someone and you don't feel like you can talk about your kinks or your sexual desires with them, you should not be married to them.
No, and nobody's trying to kink shame, but sometimes you don't have kinks that work together. But you know how you figure that out? By telling a girl about it.
And you should be talking about these things before you get married.
Well, so here's the other thing, right? Like, no woman is one or the other. There is no woman out there who is completely virginal and on a pedestal. Like, we have depth as well as human beings. And all women have good things about them and bad things about them. And that is not only okay, but normal and what should be happening. Yeah. And then no woman is 100% a shitty, like, is 100% a quote-unquote whore who is a bad person and immoral. No! There is no, we are all a mixture of good, bad, you know, virginal, kinky. Like, we all have different aspects. And I think there's so much interesting, like, language around women and kinks and sex where it's like, ooh, she's so kinky. I mean, I hear it all the time because I'm a redhead, right?
Yeah. That whole thing. Quinn. It's just like, yeah, let's go. Let's make out. Let's hook up in this tree. It doesn't count.
Yeah.
Yet you're still, when you get out of that tree, you're still going to be pursuing her sister romantically to marry you. Boy, sir.
Why? Sir, why?
Stop it. Do better. All right. Let's get on. And you already said your what the fuck moment.
Yeah. So my what the fuck moment was obviously the mutual rape coerced sex situation. Oh. That was absolutely disgusting. So what was your what the fuck moment?
It falls in line with that. Olivia's mom harping her whole life about virtue and duchessness and being chaste and pure and a lady. And then the second the opportunity comes up to try to seal the deal with Rupert outside of wedlock and potentially get knocked up, her mom's like, yeah, anyway, so go do this.
All the morals, ma'am, out the window.
Ma'am. Out the window. Like, just demanding, like, yeah, you better get in there and go get knocked up, young lady. Like, what? What the fuck? Literal, what the fuck? You spent her whole life just fucking degrading her for not being ladylike enough, and she needs to be this pure virginal vessel, and then you're like, yeah, so go fuck out of wedlock and hopefully get knocked up, and then, you know, save the family's finances. You piece of shit.
No, you suck.
All right, did you notice any red flags?
So under this part, I just wrote all of them. I felt like that was an accurate summary. We've talked about a lot of them so far. It's just all over the fucking place.
Yeah.
Please don't have relationships like this, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you. That's it.
Yes, agreed.
That's what I have to say. Did you have any red flags you noticed, Ashley?
You know, for one, maybe don't pursue him if he's your sister's future fiance, you know? Just a thought. Just thinking out loud there. Maybe. Also, maybe don't pursue her if she's already engaged to someone else that is not you. Again, just more thoughts, throwing them out there. If someone is spoken for or taken, maybe don't go after them. I don't know. It makes sense to me.
Or if you are interested in them, let's just say, okay, fine. It was like love at first sight and you were super interested in each other. You don't think you could, like, chill and wait until you could inform the other person? Or, like, for her, for example, how easy would it have been for her to go to her sister and be like, actually, he made out with me and we've made out a couple times now and you really should know that and I'm super sorry, but that's what's happening. That solves that problem.
Yeah.
Two, wait till the guy returns from war.
Maybe. Just, you know, more thoughts, more feelings.
You wouldn't have had to wait that long. He died, like, pretty much immediately, so.
Which, this is perfect segue into, is there something to be learned from this book that applies to daily life?
So I didn't actually write anything in this section because
I think you just said it.
I was so annoyed. But like, yeah, it's what you learn is that the okay, I'm gonna jump on a high horse here.
Yeah.
The one big thing we are missing, I think, repeatedly in any romance and in current modern romance is communication. It is just not that hard to be honest and open and communicative. And when you fuck up, to say it, or when you feel something, to say it. Like, I'm a big believer in, like, you give all the information you can and you be honest and mm-hmm. then it'll work out. But it's not going to mm-hmm. work out if you're a lying sack of shit who, like, hides in trees to make out with people and doesn't confront any of your feelings. Like, in what way did you think that was going to go well? What? just
hiding in trees.
I don't understand. So I guess what I would say, this thing to be learned from this book, is fucking communicate and open your goddamn fucking mouth and tell people how you're feeling.
So Susan obviously does not care for the miscommunication trope. But who does? I'm serious. Everyone Honestly. Hates the miscommunication trope with a passion. But, you know, it makes sense because no one wants to make themselves vulnerable first. You know, no one wants to put themselves out there for rejection.
Well, that's the thing, right? So, like, for me, it's one thing if you both, like, really like each other and you just don't tell each other. Like, that's your own fucking goddamn problem. My issue is when other people are dragged into your bullshit. Like, that is where I'm going to have a problem.
You know, like your sister or your fiancé.
Or mother. Oh, your mother got dragged into this shit.
Yeah, I know. Stop it. Chill. Act right. These children need to act right. Kids these days. Kids in the, what was this, like, 1800s?
This was supposed to be some French war or another. I don't know, man. Now we know what Susan feels.
Susan feels many things.
All the things. Ashley, is there something to be learned from this book that you think applies to daily life?
You know, again, don't hook up with your sister's soon-to-be betrothed / intended. And again, so you had talked about this. Just be honest. All Olivia had to do, I feel like her relationship with her sister was strong enough to withstand that. So just a little honesty. Just be like, hey, he mauled my face. I kind of liked it. How do you want to handle this?
Yeah, exactly. And frankly, like, let's be real. When we talked about, we've mentioned this a few times now, the emotional development in this book is just out the goddamn window because there was no, Georgiana was just like, okay, I guess I'll go be a scientist. And we were all like, wait, I'd be really upset if, because she did at one point, she was like, I'm not stupid, you know, like, I know what's going on. But there was no, like, apparently Georgiana is so emotionally evolved that she's like, whatever, instead of like, hey, that really hurt me. Maybe you could chill. But there was no attempt to resolve that emotionally whatsoever.
Because I feel like if she were honest from the get-go, Georgiana would have helped her.
Oh, yeah. Oh, 100%.
She's not going to waste her time on some guy that made out with her sister on site.
No.
She wouldn't want to be married to someone that would do that. So.
No, who develops a crush on somebody that you know is wildly attracted to your sister and made out with her on site? And you're like, oh, never mind.
I mean, unless you're really toxic, but you know what I mean? I mean, like, no. Sure. Like, but, I mean, obviously, then there would be a book. There would be a book, but it would be a vastly different book, probably.
Which, frankly, I would like to read those 175 pages she threw out, because maybe there was a better book in there.
Now I'm interested.
So am I. Please share.
Do you have a spicy snippet that you'd like to share about this book?
So, I may have misinterpreted this, but we haven't talked about this yet, so I'm going to throw it in here. And I said, let's talk about the way historical romance novels treat virginity, because it is wild. Oh my God. It is fucking wild. This girl is in so much pain, and all I kept screaming was, this isn't because you're a virgin, bitch. This is because you were not prepared. This is because this man just shoved his dick in you, and you were not wet enough.
I think he didn't realize she was a virgin.
No, that's true. That's absolutely true.
But still, if you know, she refers to his penis as a battering ram. So obviously he's well endowed.
Yes.
Compared to the one other penis she has seen. And, you know, if you're well endowed, like just a little.
Maybe be a little more careful, bud. Jesus
maybe,
Christ.
Maybe don't shove it into places abruptly.
Yeah. Maybe, like, ease your way in, and then you could do the battering ram thing once you know she's comfortable. Do you have a spicy snippet or hot take you'd like to share about this book?
So, Olivia kind of sucked. A little bit. Kind of a lot. But I do, I I did still feel for her on a certain level, because during that time period, she didn't have any rights. She didn't have a lot of choices. This marriage was arranged before her birth. She was trying to do the best she could with it. She could have done a little better, honestly, especially by Rupert. But I did understand where she was coming from. The entire family was placing their future and all that responsibility and weight on their wealth and everything. They were placing that all on top of Olivia's shoulders, and that depended on how this engagement / marriage went. So she felt at that point she didn't have a choice. And during that time period, she didn't. She wasn't allowed. Yeah. Like, she just had to do what she was told, and that was it. Yeah. That being said, she's still a selfish jerk. But the other one, this book reminds me of a certain season / book about the Bridgerton.
Mm-hmm.
You know, maybe book 2, season 2 of the whole, I'm going to pursue the younger sister because she's perfect on paper, but I'm totally going to try to bang it out with the older sister the whole time.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, it's Bridgerton, but worse.
It's worse. It's much worse.
Who would you want to be besties with and why?
So the only person I can stand enough to want to be friends with is probably Georgiana.
Yeah.
At the end of the book. Now, she turns out to be a fucking legend with the whole, like, I'm going to be a scientist thing, but I really missed out on the character development. So if that's who she really is, it's definitely Georgiana.
Fair. I like that. Okay. Who do you want to throat punch and why?
I wrote the author for writing this.
Ooh.
That's the case.
I mean, it was problematic. AF.
As the children say.
As the kids these days say. Who would you want on your side in a fight and why?
Okay, so a physical fight, I have no idea. A verbal fight, I want that Dowager Duchess. I want her on my side every day for the rest of my life in my corner.
Yeah, man. She'd be making people cry.
Oh, my God.
I love it. I'm here for it. I'm here for verbal evisceration. It's my favorite. Who would you cast for these characters or assign characters zodiac signs based on vibe?
Oh, let's do zodiac signs. Okay.
Okay, good. I didn't.
This is from ucdavis.edu.
Mm-hmm.
So here we go. I'm going to say Georgiana is a Virgo.
Okay.
With the like perfectionist kind of vibe. Like when she said, mm-hmm. like, if I'm going to do something, I might as well do it right.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like that's a very Virgo vibe. Let's see. I would say that Quinn is a Scorpio.
Ooh, yeah.
With that like deeply intense inner world, but refuses to talk about it.
Mysterious,
but not really vibe. So we've got a good, we've got a solid Scorpio on our hands there.
All right.
What else we got? We've got Olivia. I'm gonna put Olivia as, ooh, I kind of want to put her as a Gemini.
Ooh.
Because of this, like, I think she's super witty. I think she's deeply smart. She's so lively. She's so, like, outgoing and out there. And then she seems so loyal. And then in private is just a fucking dick. Like, so I think she really has got that two-faced vibe going on. And I don't, not all Geminis, but.
Yes, yeah. Not all Geminis.
Not all Geminis. I have very good Gemini friends.
I guess we should do Rupert.
I'm kind of thinking maybe a Sagittarius.
Okay.
With that, like, kind of blind optimism.
Yeah.
And a little bit impulsive.
Oh, for sure.
So I'm going to go Sagittarius on that one. It's my zodiac analysis for you.
I like it.
So, speed round.
Yes.
Who do you want to be besties with and why? Go.
Lucy, MVP.
Oh, love
winner, winner, chicken dinner. She's the best. Lucy is the best part of this entire book.
You're exactly right. And they shit on her and they shouldn't. Like the whole flea bit and rat tail thing. I was like, shut up about Lucy.
Mutts are the best. Shut up.
Okay. Who do you want to throat punch and why?
Olivia's parents. Her mom in particular. Because what the fuck, man? They're using their children as objects to heighten their status and wealth.
Yeah.
Like they're... They don't even, it's not even, like, they don't even show their kids love or respect. They just care about what their kids can do for them or bring them.
And they want to squash any glimmer of individuality in either.
Yeah, exactly. It's just all, you have to be textbook Duchess, this, this, that. But then, you know, like I said in the what the fuck, as soon as it's like, oh, hey, if you let my son knock you up, we'll like go ahead and honor the marriage no matter what. And she's like, yeah, go in the library and fuck this guy. You barely know. Cool. He just turned 18. So
what? Horrified. Horrified.
Gross. All right.
All right. Who would you want on your side in a fight and why?
Same as you, going with the Dowager. She's mean as hell. I can't wait for her to make people cry. I am ready. I'm ready for the tears.
Oh, she's so good. Cuts right to the bone. All right, yeah. Who would you cast, and or what are the Zodiac signs for the main characters?
Okay, so you got Zodiac. I didn't think about it. I only cast Olivia and Quinn.
Okay.
So for Olivia, I'm going to go with Dasha Polanco. She is from Orange is the New Black. Okay. She's the one that gets pregnant with the guard's baby.
Yeah.
You know, there's a lot of talk in the reviews that, kind of like how you said earlier, it kind of makes it wants, like the author wants her to be plus size, but she doesn't really seem like she's full on plus size. It just seems like she's not thin.
Yeah.
So I really, so if you're going to say your character's plus size, we're going to cast a lovely plus size leading lady. And I feel like this actress could really pull off the emotional nuance.
Yeah.
She can be a selfish brat, but at the same time, really bring all the emotion to it and still manage to make you love her and care about her.
Yeah, absolutely.
And then for Quinn, I went with Aidan Turner. He plays the vampire on the UK version of Being Human. Have you found his picture yet?
Yes, I have. Yes,
He is so... Okay, so it's stated throughout the book. He is very intense, right? But also, I needed to find someone that could pull off the rogue hair.
Yep.
Picture him with the rogue hair.
It works.
Perfect.
It totally works.
He has a very... I'm not saying he's ugly. He's very beautiful. He's a very beautiful man. His bone structure and everything. He has a very intense face.
It's the brow. It's this super heavy brow.
Yeah, he has a really heavy brow. Very stern looking. And he could totally pull off the rogue hair.
Absolutely.
And I think the two of them would look really good together.
Yeah.
They match. They mesh.
I feel it.
That's what we think. Let's see what some other people think. I've got some Goodreads reviews here. And we're going to go high to low. Let's get depressed. Okay. Megan gave it 5 stars. Another lovely fairy tale with a twist from Eloisa James. Betrothed from birth to a future duke, a regency woman falls for the duke her sister hopes to marry. There are as many layers to this story as there are mattresses on the pallet for the princess in the pee test. Which I guess we didn't really super get into, like, matching to the region.
It's irrelevant.
Because it's not, like, literally she threw in the slapstick end of the book adventure, and that's when she's like, hey, they put these 20 mattresses up so that this creepy guy guarding her wouldn't molest her, and the P is a key that didn't even work. Still almost died, so.
And it saved them. They climbed the mattresses so they could breathe fresh air out the window.
Yep. So they definitely got the domineering mother. Yes. The mother picking the betrothed. They definitely got that. But the pee was a key, and the mattresses were, I mean, they were there. Tracy gave it 5 stars. Chubby heroine.
Solid. Solid. Okay.
You know what? Yeah. Hell yeah. I mean, they only call her fat like a bajillion times.
75 times.
Oh, shit, did you really count?
No. I just exaggerated and made up a number.
June Marie gave it 4 stars. As with most Eloisa James's books, some of the plot points make you want to smack her. But a romp with a horny duke is always enjoyable. Not so much for Olivia. The first one, anyway.
Super fucking painful, actually.
All right. View gave it 3 stars. Okay, this is weird. I didn't quite like the characters, but I loved what each of them represented. It's all very confusing.
Honestly, reading that review is a lot like reading this book.
Yeah.
Convoluted, and I don't know what you meant to say.
Haley gave it 3 stars. This was weirdly ableist. Agreed. Agreed. We talked about this. We, like, beat the dead horse with this. It's just fucking ridiculous. Sydney gave it 2 stars. Shallow is as shallow does. I'd say that pretty much sums up Olivia.
It's pretty great.
Okay, Jeannie LC gave it 2 stars. I adored the 2 characters who were the love interests. However, I was ashamed for how the author portrayed Rupert. Even those who liked him made fun of him to each other. When I read that the author based him on Forrest Gump, it made sense to me, as I disliked that movie also. And the book would have been fine, except for the last 30 pages. Unnecessary and poorly executed. A lot of hate for the end adventure, the little slapstick adventure there. All right, I don't want to get copyright. Corey gave it 2 stars. I cannot tell you how much I was loving this book until it seemed like Eloisa James remembered the title and tried to find and tried to find a way to make it fit the book, and the ending was, all caps, so disappointing. It seemed like 2 books were merged together and the second book was terrible. That's fair. Beanbag Love gave it 1 star. Incoherent story, unlikable characters, absurd and forced climax. This is a stinker for sure.
Oof.
And the most egregious thing, the only innocent, endearing character that I gave a hoot about was killed off to make way for a tidier HEA for a selfish couple. Yuck. Seriously disappointing, and all caps, not recommended. I mean,
honestly, fair.
They have a point. All right, Demetra, this is the last one, gave it 1 star. Did not finish. The character said mean things and talked about the male anatomy.
I'm sorry.
I need to take a screenshot of your face. Oh my god.
Ma'am.
Where
do you think you are?
Ma'am, did you happen upon this book by accident? Because I don't know if you realize this, but historicals have some of the raunchiest
shit. Oh my god.
All kinds of rampant male anatomy.
Disgusting.
All up in that.
How did you get here? Oh my god.
Ma'am, okay. Are you lost? Okay. Big moment. How many and what kind of phallic symbols would you rate this book?
So good. I'm gonna rate it a single celery stalk. That's what I'm gonna rate it.
But not a limp one.
Not a limp one. I'm gonna label it a single raging hard celery stalk. I would give it 2 because I actually did have fun reading it. If it wasn't for the wonderful whammy of fat shaming and ableism that I saw throughout, and also semi-rape. I don't know, man. Like, it just was everything I did not want in a historical romance novel.
Yeah, it was pretty messed up.
Personally. How about you? What's your phallic symbol rating?
So, oddly enough, overall, it was very charming, considering everything that was in it. So, I would have given it 4, but as you did, I had to take off a star just for the mistreatment of Rupert. Mm-hmm. And honestly, that doesn't even include the fat shaming, which, you know, maybe as of right now, I'll take off 0.5 star for that. So 2.5 stars. Or wait, excuse me. When I say star, I mean celery stalk. So I'm going to go with 2.5 celery stalks. Not limp, of course.
Not limp. Raging hard celery stalks.
Raging hard celery stalks. It is time. The bi-weekly boner. This week's boner is coming straight to you from the source material. Alright, are you ready?
I am ready.
Battering ram. Boom! Ow. That is what I think of. Okay, so we kind of talked about this a little bit before. You know, Olivia loses her virginity to Quinn, and when she first sees his junk, she describes it as a battering ram and wonders how it's ever going to fit inside of her. Here's the thing. When you refer to a penis as a battering ram, it is implied you are not going to have a good time.
Well, you want to know why? Because it doesn't just imply about shape or size or anything else. It's not exactly nuanced in its movement. The other side of it is a battering ram also implies that the other side is immovable and attempting to stay very still.
Yeah.
And I don't know if you've ever had sex where only one partner is moving, but it's not ideal.
I feel like in this time period, there's a lot of what we refer to as starfishing, where you literally just kind of lay still and splay yourself out on the bed in the shape of a starfish.
Lay back and think of England.
Exactly. Exactly. Olivia, however, was not thinking of England because there was a battering ram in the room with her, which is terrifying. Kids in the 1800s. What are you thinking?
Fabulous.
That's the tortured thumb for this week. But eventually, I'd like to hear some lecherous limb descriptions from all of you listeners. No pictures, please. Just written descriptions. You can email the goods to torturedthumbspodcast@gmail.com, put biweekly boner in the subject line, and don't forget, you must include the name of the book or article and author. We did it!
We did it!
So yeah, how do you feel?
This was fantastic. This was so much fun. And it's a lovely way to catch up with you too.
Yeah!
And hear like a little bit about your life, because we're both busy people.
Alright, well awesome. Thank you so much.
Anytime.
Join me back here in 2 weeks for our next read.
Peter Darling by Austin Chan.
And remember to fix each other's crowns and don't let the dicks get you down.
Toodles.
Thanks for listening. If you'd like to support the podcast, you can do so by rating and reviewing on Apple Podcasts or liking, subscribing, and following on whatever platform you're listening on. Not enough action for you? You can follow Turgid Tomes Podcast on Instagram, like the Facebook page, or join the Goodreads group, where you can chat with other listeners, lurk tawdry reviews, and get a heads up on what we're reading and drinking. If you have any suggestions or feedback, you can send it to turgidtomes@gmail.com. And last but not least, remember to fix each other's crowns and don't let the dicks get you down.